WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie
good.
Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome to Monday Night Talk. We have a great show lined up for you, a variety of guest, of course, on the board this evening is Ben. Ben, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Kevin, and yourself?
We're doing pretty good. We have a nice little lineup. We're going to have you busy towards the end of the show. I hope you don't mind.
Oh, I never mind, Kev. It's always a great time.
As I kind of putting the cart before the horse here, but that is that WATD's John Shea, host of Almost Famous, will be joining us in studio at 7:30, along with Monk Duane, who is a local musician and somebody who was nominated in two categories for the New England Music Awards. The two categories are Album of the Year and Video of the Year. So we're looking forward to that. But let's talk a little bit about the first hour. First hour, we will have a state representative, Shauna O'Connell, will be joining us, and I should say mayoral candidate Shauna O'Connell will be joining us. But she still is a state representative, and we look forward to chatting with us. We've had her on the program before, but we get a chance to speak with her in a different capacity, as Mayor Hoy has moved on. I guess he got picked to serve the county by the governor. And this is opening up a little bit of an opportunity for folks to get involved and get in on this the mayoral race. We'll talk about that. And then we have John Mahoney. John is one of my another favorite guests. Of course, he is the member of Plymouth's Select Board. And when John comes in, John is usually right on top of things when it comes to issues in his community, whether it's has something to do with what the board's working on, something that the constituents are concerned with. Oh, heck, even when it comes to county issues, John is right there, and we're looking forward to the conversation with him on that. And then we have a Weymouth at-large councilor, Chris Heffernan, and town councilor, Becky Ha. They'll be joining us to chat a little bit about the upcoming race in Weymouth, or races. Becky, of course, she's seeking an at-large seat. I believe that there are five at-large seats. She's seeking to move from town council as a town councilor to be an at-large councilor. We'll chat with her about that. And Chris, of course, seeking re-election. I did put a text in to Mayor Hedlund. Maybe we might even have Mayor Hedlund. No promises. But, hey, it'd be cool if we had a mayoral candidate and a mayor on at the same time.
Wouldn't that be something?
That would be something. So...
met our friend Dave at this year's Cigar BBQ. Listen, Dave, it's not that I don't like the government. You got me all wrong. It's I don't like a tyrannical government that rips its people off under the pretense of taking care of us, telling us the money is going to be used for something and then using it for something else. Obviously not the MBTA. No, no, no. 18's not an adult. 21 is an adult. Oh, by the way, you can't have that flavor and you can't have that style now that you're a big person. But go ahead, go down the bar and drink all the flavored booze you can and get as clobbered as you want. You want to talk about community impact? They finally fixed 44 down at Plymouth Ragua. It only took 20 years. How's that for community impact? Brennan's Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the the best smoke shop in Massachusetts because we pay our taxes. Dave.
Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
Hey, we are back. And, you know, as I teased earlier, it's been a while since we've had this representative on, but I recall one of the conversations we had was how there was an abuse going on when it came to benefits and folks trying to use benefits that the state was giving them to try to buy things like jewelry. And this representative was on chatting with us. That's the last conversation I can remember. But joining us right now is State Representative Shauna O'Connell. She is, she's got her hat in the ring, hopefully to be the next mayor of Taunton. A representative, welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing?
We're doing pretty good. Yourself?
Good, thanks.
So, I see you're entering the race for mayor. How tough of a decision was it? Or was it a no-brainer?
Well, you know, it's a little bit bittersweet because I have really enjoyed my work in the legislature. But, I'm a lifelong Taunton resident. I'm raising my family here. And I really love my hometown. And I'm looking forward to being even more hands-on right here and really working with others to transform Taunton from a gateway city to a leading city in the Commonwealth. We have so many great resources here, so many wonderful people, and a lot of potential.
Do you recall the issue I'm talking about? What was the benefits that folks were looking to use, and you sought to put a stop to folks being able to use certain state benefits to be able to,
yeah.
I don't know if it's EBT cards, is that what it was, to be able to buy jewelry?
Yeah. So when I got to the legislature, it's been, a little over 8 years now, one of the first things I started working on was welfare reform, really. And they're called EBT cards. People get cash assistance. People also get SNAP assistance, which is food stamp assistance. And, we were aware that, unfortunately, there were certainly people that were abusing their benefits. We know that many people need those benefits and use them for what they're supposed to be used for, but we were interested in really clamping down on things that people were doing, buying liquor. The first things we went after was the liquor, the lottery tickets, tobacco, to ban those types of purchases, because that money is for necessities, and those certainly aren't necessities in my book or probably anyone else's book. So we started with that. We got that banned, and we kept going further. As you know, there was we did a records request, and cost us like $800 to find out how high balances were on people's cards. We found out that the highest balance was $12,000 on one card. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners out there probably don't have a $12,000 balance to go buy groceries with every month.
No.
So then we took care of that problem and many others. And, the most recent thing that we were able to do with the EBT was to make sure that you could not purchase recreational marijuana once it became legal here in Massachusetts. We certainly didn't want to see people abusing their benefits in that way either.
What do you see as being the prime issues, taking your race from, being somebody who was, you've been successful being reelected on the state level, now being on the municipal level? How do the issues change for you, and how do you change your campaign to fit those conversations with the residents?
The issues, I guess, have become a lot more localized. And, luckily, I've been out talking to people, campaigning really hard. I know a lot of people, know my name. They're familiar with the work I've done. And they seem to see me as somebody who can really affect change. And that's what they're looking for here in Taunton. And the outpouring of support has been, just overwhelming, really incredible. We're really energized. People are energized for this change, and we're feeling really great about the whole thing.
You really didn't have a lot of time to really make a decision, because there was the announcement that Mayor Hoy had been appointed to a county post, I believe. And then before we knew it, we had a race on our hands. Is that correct?
That's right, but there are four people in the race, so obviously there was plenty of time. I mean, it's not really a high bar to get into the race. You only need 25 signatures. So it's not a difficult thing to get your name on the ballot, and I'm glad to see that there's other people on the ballot as well. And, it's kind of, people have been talking to me all year about, you know, will I run for mayor? Do I want to run for mayor? And I had said, you know, I think maybe at some point that's something that I could do. But I wasn't really that keen on running against the current mayor. He's a friend of mine, and we don't go out socially and hang out together or anything like that. But I think sometimes when that happens, it puts people in a very awkward position right here in town that they really don't like to be put in. So, when Mayor Hoy made his intentions clear that he was not going to be in the race anymore, I thought, you know what, this is the opportunity for us and opportunity to do something really great for my community, and I'm gonna jump in.
And now, this isn't unheard of legislators going from the state level to municipal. We know the most recent couple that we've had. We had Jimmy Cantwell, who's running the state campaign for Senator Ed Markey. We know, of course, Republican Senator Bob Hedlund, who is currently seeking re-election in Weymouth. Have you had a chance to tap Bob and say, what was it like for you to, run for mayor? Or what are some of the things that you did to go from the state? Have you had a chance to speak with other legislators and discuss this, or not so much?
Yeah, I actually have. And Bob, he was a friend when he was in the Senate. He's a great guy. And he was someone who was never afraid and really got things done in the Senate and has been very successful as the mayor of Weymouth. Somebody that I would definitely love to sit down and talk with. I think Weymouth is lucky to have Bob Hedlund as the mayor, and he's done a wonderful job there.
Again, we're speaking with the state representative, Shauna O'Connell, and she is a candidate for the mayor in Taunton. If you want to check out her website, it is Shauna, S-H-A-U-N-N-A, O'Connell, O-C-O-N-N-E-L-L.com. What are the conversations with residents? What are residents saying to you? You indicated earlier that folks are energized by you entering this race. What are they saying to you as their key concerns? Is it the typical, we need our streets fixed, we have issues with gateway cities and public safety? What is it?
It is a lot of that. Streets are always a huge issue in a lot of municipalities, and Taunton is no different. Taunton has a very large area. We have a lot of miles of streets, so that's definitely something that people are worried about. Public safety is always something as well. I've been, really on top of public safety my entire time in the legislature. That's been one of my priorities. So I really look forward to working. We have a fantastic police force here in Taunton. Our guys and gals are incredible. They give back so much to our community and protect us. So I'm really looking forward to working with them. And, we just have people signing up on our website every single day to volunteer, to get in touch with us. I had, I think maybe five calls just on my home phone today from people that just wanted to talk to me and wish me luck and get involved. So it really has been wonderful, and we really feel great about the support that we're getting right here in Taunton. And one of the things I think I can really bring to a mayor's seat is kind of a contrast to other mayors in this state, especially when you might think about mayors who want to make their cities into sanctuary cities. And, I think I can really be a contrast there, because that to me is a public safety issue as well, and a taxpayer issue. And I want to show people that we can run our cities well for the people that live here.
When it comes to a municipal race, most times or many times, there's no party affiliate. It's nonpartisan. But you still have the R next to your name. Do you feel that your party affiliation in a gateway city will help or hinder your campaign? Or do you think that people are going to see Shauna, the person who wants to put people first?
What's really great about people here in Taunton is they don't look at the letter behind my name. I've been reelected, five times now. And if I didn't have the support of people who are independent, unenrolled, and Democrat, I wouldn't be in this seat. So people really see me as someone, I think you put it well, they see me as Shauna, who's going to fight for them. They don't see me as a party. They see me as a person. And they know that I'm present. I'm very involved in the community. I do what's right for them. And I am very accessible, always having office hours. I actually just finished up my office hours here where we had a constituent come to us with an issue and sat in with for about 45 minutes with her. So I'm going to do the same thing as mayor. I'm not sure that that's really heard of, but we are going to have office hours when I'm mayor as well. People really like that accessibility and being able to come right in and talk to me.
I think it's worth noting that, you know, you were just, what, six, would we say maybe 8-9 months ago, you were, well, maybe it was maybe 10 months ago, campaigning for re-election for state representative. Do you feel rested up for this campaign run?
Oh, I sure do. Believe me, we're already out there knocking on doors, talking to people, meeting with anybody who wants to meet with us. It's exciting, and the people that are joining our team from all over the city, all parts of the city, all walks of life, is really wonderful and inspirational for us.
Any reservation when you thought about running for mayor? This isn't like some, like Weymouth, Bob Hedlund, it's every 4 years. Brockton, it's every 2 years. You know, those officials, whether it's city councilors or the mayor, it's every 2 years, and I would believe it's the same with Taunton, correct?
It is, yes.
Any thoughts like, every 2 years? It's not like you're leaving the legislature where every 2 years you're seeking re-election. It's going to be the same thing. No issues with that?
No, that didn't really cross my mind at all. I mean, I'm used to that anyway. But you know, it wasn't a real hard decision because just being able to be so hands-on in my city and really make a difference and work with all these people and bring up the morale of everybody in city government and letting all the employees know that they are valued, their opinions are valued, that they contribute, everybody contributes something important in some way, is something I really look forward to doing.
Do you feel that it gives you a distinct advantage knowing, because a lot of candidates say, oh, you know, I'm going to make sure that I'm talking with my legislators and, you know, whatever we need for our city, I'm going to be talking. You have those relationships. Do you feel that that makes you, that puts you basically as a leading contender, not only for the preliminary, but for the general election, that folks are looking at that saying, this is a person who has connections up at Beacon Hill if that we need something for our community, and that's going to go a long way.
You know, I really think it will. I mean, you know, just bringing my experience and knowledge and connections as state representative and being able to use those in my position as mayor, I think is invaluable as I try to do that job and really manage the city well, manage our budget well, you know, get the resources that we need here in Taunton for the different challenges we face and the different projects that we have going on. I think that's really going to be invaluable.
Anything I haven't asked you in regards to this campaign, but you kind of feels important to letting the listeners, the voters know as a mayoral candidate in Taunton?
You know, I think you covered a lot, Kevin. You're really good at your job here as well. And, you know, if anybody wants to get in touch with us, wants to help us, we'd love to have them come and sign up on my website, shaunaoconnell.com. Like I said, I really think I can stand out as a different kind of mayor here in Massachusetts. And, you know, hopefully others will follow in our footsteps. We've been able to really stand out as state representative and stand up for issues that are important to people. And I think I can do the same thing as mayor.
I was going to ask you kind of who would you miss in the legislature? Is there a set of legislators that you would miss working with if you are successful in November? Do you want to kind of share that? Are there some folks that you work with on a regular basis that, you know, you're going to miss seeing their faces, you know, when you are up on the Hill?
You know, there's a lot of great people in the legislature that I've worked with over the years, Republicans and Democrats as
right.
well. So there's a lot of people that I'll miss. You know, I've made a lot of great relationships, a lot of good friends. So I definitely will, but I feel like I'll still be able to be in touch with them all in my job as mayor, if I'm honored to be elected. And I will keep in close touch with the legislature, because you need that relationship to really help your city.
Well, I would love to have you back on sometime before November, if possible, and even afterwards, just to kind of talk about a campaign wrap-up, if you may.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. Well, listen, best of luck out on the campaign trail. And again, we look forward to talking to you again as to how things are progressing.
Okay, thanks a lot, Kevin. You take care. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. There it is. State Representative Shauna O'Connell, who is a candidate for mayor in Taunton. A check-in with Ben. Your thoughts in regards to the representative turned mayoral candidate?
Honestly, I'm looking forward to her style of getting things done. Like we said right at the top of the broadcast, the first thing of business she took care of was taking care of the EBT fraud, which was a rampant problem. And I didn't even know about that $12,000 card. I don't know if a lot of people knew about that, but I am so happy to hear she's cleaning that kind of stuff up.
Again, this was kind of a past tense thing from a few years ago when it was rampant, and it was a push to make sure that there was you can ID people who had the EBT cards, and it was a little bit more a closer look when it came to some of the accounts as to what they had compiled in the EBT card. A couple of other things that she's actually been a part of, and we didn't have a chance to chat with her about it because, again, she's making a push for mayor, but some of the things she's done was looking to be a part of the bill that would impose the death penalty for somebody who would take the life of a police officer. She supported that. Also took action on a report that took when it came to sex offenders finding a loophole in changing their names. She was involved in on that. So a couple of things that the representative was instrumental in. And we'll definitely look forward to chatting with her and seeing how she does, and see if she ends up being like some of the other state representative who we have had on the show previously, Tom Coulter, who went from being a state representative to being a town administrator. I mentioned Jim Cantwell, who leads the charge he's the state guy for Senator Ed Markey. Just to name a few. Jeff Deal, we know, who ran for U.S. Senate, not successful, but now he's more of a media personality and doing his own thing. So, again, folks, move on from it. We mentioned Bob Hedlund, too. Let's do this, Ben. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, my next guest, warming up in the bullpen, coming on in from the Plymouth Select Board, John Mahoney. Just a few moments. You're listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Hey, we are back. And joining us is John Mahoney, a gentleman who I definitely enjoy whenever we have him in studio. There's been times he's come in as a guest and somehow slid into being a guest co-host because I've enjoyed the conversation with him. So he is here, a member of the Plymouth Select Board. Did I say that correctly?
You said that. That's correct.
Okay. Yeah, that was voted by the people.
That's voted by the people. There was a change of town meeting, Kevin, and that's what we go by nowadays.
How are you?
Not bad. Driving up Route 3 tonight. Got a little bit of good news. Chris Sale doesn't need Tommy John surgery. Of course.
But he hasn't been pitching all that well this year.
But between you and I don't know if I would have given him a 145 extension for 5 years. But having said that, that was good news. I'm ever optimistic, but can they... I see nothing, Kevin, that indicates that they can overcome their 6-7 game deficit to
win. Yeah, with the Rays and the Oakland A's. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Cleveland.
So I thought you were a baseball guy.
Yes, I am. I consider myself to be, so... You know, we try. Harold Baines is in the Hall of Fame, but Dwight Evans and Louis Tiant are not. So that always bothers me, but I try to not get too excited about it.
Someday, John.
Yeah, okay.
Someday it'll happen. I find it kind of interesting. There was a time we saw the San Francisco Giants every other year. They'd win a championship, then they were really bad the next year. Then the next year they went, I almost feel like the Sox are on that slide. They're like, you know, they were bad 1 year. They're good. They win it all, right?
Yeah,
get rid of the manager, bring in a new manager, you win it all, right?
Yeah, I know there was a point about a decade, 8 to 10 years ago where San Francisco won it 3 out of 5 years.
Mm. Yeah, then we ended up signing one of their players who we're still paying for. Pablo Sandoval.
Yes, and he is back with them.
And he's
apparently doing okay.
He's doing okay. So. Shed a little bit of that panda bamboo, right? Yeah. He's doing okay.
Yeah. But that's and let's go back there for a moment. So we're talking about the San Francisco Giants, and remarkably, Carl Yastrzemski,
his grandson,
80 this week. His grandson has been called up at the age of 29 and is doing extraordinarily well.
Yeah, he's hit like 18 home runs. Yeah, he's doing well. Yeah, he hit 3 home runs.
I believe he did.
Yeah. Yeah, the grandson of the Yaz.
Yep. Yeah, and Carl, the grandfather, turns 80 this week.
Yeah, I was a big fan of the Yaz. I even got one of those shirts when I was a kid where he had hit 3,000. He had 3,000 hits and 400 home runs.
Yes.
Back in the late 70s.
My team was, I'm younger. My team was the 78 Red Sox. If they had won it, I would have been happy for eternity. But having said that, let's move on to...
Three words. Bucky bleeping Dent.
All right.
You pulled Mike Torres. That's all I'm going to say. Oh, we thought we'd have you in. I love having you in to talk a little bit about what's going on in your community, seeing that it is in our listening area. And one of the things that we have covered on a consistent basis is the shutdown of the Pilgrim nuclear power plant, and of course the sale and handoff to Holtec International. It was as a concerned citizen, how do you feel? How do you feel about how things have progressed from the shutdown to where things stand at this moment?
Well, you're concerned about safety, and some of that concern about safety is directly coming out of the finances that are involved. So the plant powered down over Memorial Day weekend of this year. We are, that facility is no longer producing electricity. The town itself has a 2-year pilot extension with them that if the license is approved, the transfer, that Holtec is going to honor. So for fiscal year 20, $7 million, and for fiscal year 21, $6.5 million we have. And then after that, you're into this great unknown. So what happened, Kevin, and this is where the concern comes in, is that as ratepayers, we've been paying, all residents of Massachusetts for decades have been paying a little bit of extra on a kilowatt of electricity, and that goes into a bucket of money for the quote-unquote safe decommissioning of this power plant. Currently, there's roughly about $1.1 billion in there. And up until Holtec came along, you know, the speculation by the bean counters, if you will, at the federal and state level was that you would need $1.3 to $1.4 million to safely decommission this facility. Holtec comes in and says, wait a second, that's not true. We can do that for considerably less than the $1.1 billion. So, you know, and you ask questions as to how can they get that done, but you don't get the answer. So now, as you know, it's expected that 3 days from now, the NRC will sign off on the transfer of the license from Entergy Corporation, based down in Louisiana, to Holtec International, and they will become the holder of the license. The Attorney General's office, 2 to 3 weeks ago, and this is the best thing that the town of Plymouth saw done, was that they sent a letter into the NRC asking for a 90-day stay of that decision so that they can continue to negotiate one-on-one with Holtec and see if we can get some things accomplished. That apparently has fallen on deaf ears, and I just heard today, I think you might have had some other groups filing in court for, you know, a further delay of this license, but that's the most information I have currently up to date. So let's just operate under the assumption that the license does change hands. How are you all of a sudden coming in and doing this quote-unquote safe decommissioning for $500, $600, $700, $800 million?
Mm-hmm.
How is that being accomplished? And
safely.
And then if they do that, of course, safely, they get to pocket the differential. And now, with roughly 104 sites in the United States of these nuclear sites, I mean, this is just the beginning, Kevin. So it's almost like Holtec is auditioning for more, because it's not just $1.1 billion. That pot of gold is in Plymouth. These pots of gold exist all over the United States. So they're going to want to continue and just keep going. So it's really, you're fighting, you're competing for tens of billions of dollars.
See, I would think that if they are, if let's say it's $600 million, $700 million, whatever the savings is, why should it go to Holtec? Why shouldn't it go back to the rate payers? Why should it stay in a kitty, so to speak, in case there are errors made during the shutdown and the storage of those spent rods in dry cast?
Right. Now, that's an excellent point. So some of the questions, and this is frustrating because it's our money. So they're going after this pot of gold that is our money. It's mm-hmm. the rate payers' money. What are the financial details of this transaction? We're not telling you. They're not telling us. What's the guarantee that you're putting on the dry cast storage? And as the spent fuel is taken out of the pools and put into the dry cast storage, and these casks are roughly 20 foot tall, they're basically a 200 ton basically keg or canister that's made of steel and concrete that stands on a pad, basically in perpetuity. So what's the guarantee there? So with respect to your point, you would think that some of that money would be left in an account. So if and when there was a problem down the road, you're not scrambling to find funds to rectify it. Okay? And by the way, what do we call that kind of thinking? That's conservative, responsible thinking.
Sure.
Okay, but unfortunately, a lot of those questions about what occurs both short and long term are going unanswered.
But see, here's my thought, and that is too many times during my time as a reporter, I've followed, you know, issues when it comes to a general contractor, whether they build a school or they build a municipal building, and there's usually this money that's tucked aside to make sure that they complete their end of the bargaining. But then, you know, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, you discover that there was an issue with the roof. Maybe the folks who were working didn't do the due diligence when they were building the roof. Or maybe it might be a building that's having an issue. But that general contractor has disappeared off the planet.
Sure.
So my thought here is, and while I'm using one construction term for something else, the analogy I think is still the same. What happens if in 10 or 15 or 20 years down the road that there is something discovered, that there's an issue? Who is going to, is this something that's going to fall on the state? Is this going to turn into a Superfund site that the federal government's going to have to come in and remediate? What happens?
That's an excellent question. That is an excellent question.
But there's no answers for that.
I believe that, you know, with respect to your question about construction in schools, we have a great program in place now at the state level. It's called the Model School Program.
Mm-hmm.
And the state of Massachusetts watches these contractors like a hawk nowadays to make sure that we're getting quality of construction out of the ground. And then, unfortunately, in our society, the state has to incentivize the communities to maintain these programs by telling them, you know, we'll bump up your reimbursement from the state if you sign on to a maintenance program. So, but the ultimately, the core issue, Kevin, comes back to the fact that over the last several decades, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has been built up to a level of almost invincibility by the U.S. Senate and the U.S. Congress. And that's your federal government at work. They're impervious. They're essentially impervious to town, city, or state intervention.
Have you heard from, you know, whether any of your representatives, have you heard from Ed Markey, your U.S. senator? Has he weighed in? Or the senior senator, Elizabeth Warren, who's out on the campaign trail? Has the town of Plymouth heard from any of their representation down in Congress?
I can relate a story to you, I'm guessing.
Representative Keating. I mean, just throw names out there.
Oh, no, absolutely. They're all over it.
Okay.
But I will just tell you one story. I don't know, 4 to 6 years ago, the Board of Select Persons lined up for the Veterans Day Parade. And we had no idea that this was happening. All of a sudden, we turned around, and who was standing with us? Senator Ed Markey. And I can tell you, Kevin, that for the next 3 to 4 miles of the entire parade, the five of us just rotated in, and 90% of the discussion with Mr. Markey that day was the power plant.
He probably still remembers that day.
I believe he does.
Well, I look forward to having follow-up conversations, but I thought we could at least start it here. And again, I love the conversations that you and I have had in the past and want to continue them. Again, we're speaking with John Mahoney, a member of the Plymouth Select Board. We transitioned from talking a little bit about what's going on with the power plant to talking about a piece of property down in the southern part of Plymouth where there's a little bit of a tussle going on between the sheriff's department and the county commissioners. What have you observed? What's your thoughts on this whole thing in regards to...
You use the term tussle.
I call it a tussle because...
So I would tell you that the tussle is a fabricated or manufactured tussle, and predominantly coming out of the county commissioner's corner of the room. And this land is 90 acres. It's right off of Exit 5, adjacent to the new trial court over there.
Yep, county farm.
County farm, 90 acres, sustainable. You know, you're giving some of these inmates some of the ability to go over there and, you know, work on something during the day and build skill before they're, you know, they finish their term and go back out into society. So you're talking about 15 to 20 years ago, an organization, a volunteer organization of citizens in Plymouth said, we've got an issue here and we want to save this in perpetuity. And they organized. And it was hundreds of individuals that got together, Sam Bartlett, John Moran, just to name a couple. And it wasn't just people from Plymouth. It was people from outside of Plymouth also that wanted to see this piece of land saved in perpetuity. So effectively what happened was they got together, they got on the same page. And this is the analogy I use. They created a football. But then you need somebody to take the football and get it across the goal line. And who was that? Do you know who that was?
You'll tell us.
I will tell you. It was Senate President Therese Murray.
Okay.
So this is one of her legacies, and she was a huge advocate of getting this done. And it's almost like this is, and you're talking about an individual who served 22 years in the state Senate. The last 6 to 8 years was at the Senate President, the first woman ever elected Senate President in the history of Massachusetts. And almost like this is a broadside or an attack on her legacy. And it's unfortunate because You know, I've talked to the Senate president. You talked to the town manager in Plymouth. You talked to my other four colleagues on the board of select persons in Plymouth. And you talked to others involved. And, you know, there's a conservation restriction there. Oh, and the other one I would mention is Sheriff McDonald. And so we're all on the same page. I don't know where this is coming from. It's unfortunate. I don't believe that the commissioners have a leg to stand on. And, you know, I know that we heard recently in the last week or so that they're, quote unquote, still negotiating. And we'll see what happens there.
Barring any setbacks and any return to having, you know, putting out verbal propaganda, does the town of Plymouth have any say in this matter whatsoever, if in fact this does not get settled between the sheriff's department and the county commissioners or the county itself?
If it doesn't get settled,
does the town of Plymouth have say? Could the board of selectmen, the governing board, come in and say, "Hey, enough of this"? If they wanted to,
no. There's a conservation restriction.
Okay.
Right now, this tussle is going on between three members of the executive board of the county government and your sheriff, your quote unquote county sheriff, who was moved under the state umbrella 10 to 15 years ago. Okay. At the end of the day, if Mr. McDonald were to abdicate or vacate the farm, then at that point in time, that 90 acres reverts to the town of Plymouth. Okay. That's the only time we get involved. I mean, we can get involved as far as, you know, reaching out to the three commissioners. But, you know, I mean, I've been doing that for a decade, and they don't listen to me too often, Kevin.
Stuff happens. What can you say? So say that again. So you're saying, so if the sheriff did want to, in fact,
vacate or abdicate the farm.
So basically, there's nothing that the county can do if it gets turned over to...
Yeah, it defaults to the town of Plymouth. And then from there, we
make
a decision.
So this is a very real possibility. That's something that could happen. I don't foresee it happening, but that it could be an action.
I hope it doesn't come to that. Obviously, we're positioned to deal with that if that comes. You know, we're all set, and my board is firmly aligned. But, I mean, if it gets to that point in time, there's really something wrong. Actually, why did I just say that? There's already something wrong. I should never have gotten to this point in time.
But you think that there's some kind of an underlying reason why this dust is being kicked up now, per se?
Yeah, I think they're looking for a way to undo a visionary act.
The Therese Murray made.
You know, one of the top leaders in this state in the last 50 years. Unnecessarily. I have no idea what they're doing. I know that they, going to the last county advisory board meeting, I'm the delegate for Plymouth, you know, they want a 4-H program over there. So they say that they need 10 to 20 acres for the 4-H program. So, you know, from what I understand, there's space on that to go. I don't have a problem with that. That's agricultural.
Mm.
So, and we don't have enough of that nowadays, you can see.
What are those advisory meetings like? Give us a little bit of a snapshot. Are they? I mean, is it like a coffee hour, or is there a lot of conversation that's positive?
So they have the annual meeting where the advisory board has to approve the budget, and I believe this year the budget was $10.7 million, and it's a weighted vote, Kevin, based on property values across the county. Mm-hmm. So, 27 communities, one city, 26 towns. Plymouth has the number one weighted vote, 13.5% to 13.9%. And then I think you have a kind of a tie for second, Hingham and Brockton. And then you're getting down into the Scituates, the Duxburys, and so on and so forth. They're pretty vanilla meetings. They're pretty vanilla. This year was pretty tame and sedate, you know.
Well, there were no layoffs, right? I think it's kind of an up year financially.
Kind of.
All right, maybe not.
They've laid off dozens of individuals in the last 48 years. So I don't know if it was a quote-unquote up year. You know, I mean, they oversee a $10.7 million budget. So, you know, they're putting along doing their thing.
Thus, every time there's a political forum, the question will be asked.
Yes.
Are you for or against Plymouth County government? And you would say... I'm just kidding. Don't answer that. It was a rhetorical question.
Okay.
Anything you want to say in closing?
How much time we got left?
You got like 2 minutes left.
All right, 2 minutes. So I just locally, Kevin, the town of Plymouth is moving forward towards our 400th anniversary. And the signature event will be April of 2020 at Memorial Hall, you know, kicking off basically, you know, a year of festivities. And I don't know if we have any confirmation yet, but there's a process. So the town gave invitations to the governor's office, and those went out to all the living former presidents of the United States. Ooh. And President Trump. So we're waiting to see if
America's hometown,
if any of them show up. And we're looking forward to that year. And then the other thing, Kevin, one of the things that I'm proud of and that town of Plymouth is a leader in is certainly regionally, if not in the northeast United States, is dam removal projects. And we just finished a $6.8 million project down at the corner of Summer and Newfield Street. And I was able to speak at a Earth Day event on that with Charlie Baker. But now the entire project is done. New road, new bridge, new water, new sewer, dam removal. And there's going to be a rededication of that area. It's called Holmes Park. And it was named back in the 1930s after the last living Civil War veteran from Plymouth. The rededication will be on Saturday, October 5th at 10 a.m. Obviously, the entire town of Plymouth and the South Shore is invited. But it's something like that. I'm proud that the town of Plymouth is a regional leader in that, because the first one we took out on this body of water was in 02. And now you're seeing, what's the word I'm looking at? You know, you're looking at momentum in other communities are doing this. You know, hats off to the town of Kingston. You have the Jones River Watershed Association over there working with former rep Tom Coulter as the town manager in
Pine
the
Dubois.
State. You got it, Pine Dubois. And, you know, they're moving forward on the Elm Street dam removal. And these are great projects, and they promote public safety, higher property values, and you're investing in quality of jobs. And these are really great projects to get behind. So I'm looking forward to see the Elm Street project. I think they'll have the core of that done by Thanksgiving.
My closing comment about the town of Plymouth, me and the missus have been frequenting Plymouth and the center, and it's great to see it thrive. It's great to see people coming and spending money and taking in America's hometown. It's fantastic. Congratulations as to at least seeing folks come and spending their money and finding out what Plymouth is all about.
Yeah,
especially that waterfront.
Kevin, we've made some significant investments in the downtown area over the last decade. First and foremost, when people come down and invest in drinking and eating, the meals tax, we took that, we earmarked it for the new town hall, that brand new town hall in the center, which is the anchor. No property taxes raised for that. That's how you need to handle money, and as long as I'm involved, and it's my intention to run for another term, I'll continue to advocate for those positions.
Let's have you back in a few weeks. Love having you in.
Okay, anytime, Kevin. You got to reach out to me.
All right, we'll make sure we save enough time for Sox Talk.
Okay.
Hopefully, they're still in the conversation come October 1st. All right, John Mahoney has been our guest here, a member of Plymouth's Select Board. That's it for hour number one. Coming up in a few moments here, Becky Ha. Chris Heffernan from Weymouth Town Council on deck. We'll be back with more Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD.
South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
I'm Tiny of Tiny & Sons Glass. My boys do a good job. Here's why. When they were kids, every summer we'd go to the automotive graveyard and take cars apart. Windshields, transmissions, generators. Then comes the fun part, putting it all back together. It was summer camp at the junkyard, and it worked. They're good boys. You can trust them.
My dad did a great job.
1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk, WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Wow, and just like that, we are submerged into hour number two. Coming up later this hour, a host of Almost Famous, John Shea, along with recording artist, film composer, 2018 New England Performer of the Year, Monk Duane, will be in studio performing. Can't wait. But right now, talk a little bit of Weymouth politics. We went from the south of the South Shore to the north. Is Weymouth actually the northern part of South Shore? Or would you say that you're more so in the Boston area? I might add, so we have Chris Heffernan and we have Becky Ha. Welcome back, Becky. Chris, have you been here before?
I have not.
This is your first time?
This is my first time.
All right, well, we've raised the bar. So, you ready to do this?
I am.
All right, thank you very much for coming, both
thank
of you,
for,
seriously
yes.
enough. So, you're going to answer the question. So, is Weymouth considered the northern tip, or is Braintree somewhere, Quincy, claiming that?
I definitely think Quincy needs to be part of the South Shore, but I think Weymouth is kind of great because we can kind of claim both. We're a little metro Boston, but we're mostly South Shore.
I like to say that we are the gateway to the South Shore. All roads pass through Weymouth getting down to the South Shore. We like to call ourselves the crown jewel of the South Shore as well.
Wow. Did you get that note from Mayor Hedlund?
No, I did not.
That was something that I would
hear come from former senator, mayor seeking re-election. Mm-hmm. You're both in your own respect seeking re-election to the town council, but Chris, you're seeking re-election as an at-large.
Yes.
You're looking, Becky, to go from being a town councilor to being an at-large councilor, correct?
Correct. District 2 at-large. So
what's this race like? I mean, how many candidates do we have kind of jockeying for place in the field? Is it because it's five positions, is that correct, for at-large?
Yes.
Okay.
And we currently have 7 for 5 seats.
Ooh, that could be interesting.
It is, but I think we're all pretty cordial, and I mean, we all respect each other. I mean, we're all in it to, you know, serve Weymouth and, you know, work for Weymouth, and, you know, may the best five win.
Yeah, and you've got just a couple of weeks until the preliminary, right? September 17th?
There actually isn't a need for a preliminary
election. Because what's the number you need in order to cull it down?
I believe it would be 11 candidates for at-large, but in District 1 that my colleague is vacating right now, one of the candidates has dropped out. There's no need for a primary.
So that saves the town money.
Correct.
Yes.
And then you've got Mayor Hedlund, and then there's only one candidate, so you really don't need to... That's pretty good.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd be curious as to what it would cost for an election, or a town council, or a prelim election, anyways.
From my understanding, it's about $30,000.
But I think that's a town-wide election, so it would have been one district. So you're only, you know, voting, you're only shutting down one school, you know, for a voting location plus the senior center. So I don't think you'd have all the resources as a town-wide. But I think the debt exclusion we just passed for the Chapman Middle School, that was probably about $25,000 to $30,000.
So why do you want to run for at-large, Becky?
That's a great question, Kevin. So I've served as District 1 for about the past 6 years. You know, I started in 2014, and I just felt it was time for a little bit of change. I love doing what I'm doing, and I love serving in the district capacity, but I've learned so much, and I have so much energy still that I sort of just want to, you know, spread my wings a little and do the same thing I'm doing for North Weymouth for the entire town.
And now you're seeking re-election for what number term?
This would be my second term, so I've served since January of 2018.
So what's it been like to be an at-large counselor? Because it's not like being a district counselor. You're serving the whole town, right?
Yes. So pretty much I have 56,000 residents in Weymouth, serving all of them, all 18 precincts. I have very much enjoyed my first term on the council. Being able to be in the community, going to all these community events, and basically being out there for the last 2 years, making a difference every day in the community.
Yeah, how often is it that you're seeking re-election? Is it 2 years, three years? But yet the merits, that was the only one that was changed where instead of it being every 2 years, now it's every 4 years, right?
Well, it's always been 4 years under our charter. Brockton recently changed their charter. And in some communities, it still is.
Well, when you say recently, you're talking the 90s.
I'm sorry. Brockton did not change their charter.
Brockton changed their charter. I know because I cover yep. Brockton. That's the only reason why I know. was in the early 90s. Their last four-year term for that mayor. That mayor currently is sitting on the city council as a city councilor. So you're talking, I would say, 92.
I was actually, I confused that. It's actually Quincy who changed their charter from 2 years to 4 years.
Very good. Okay. We have everything all squared away, which is great. What do you feel has changed since 2 years ago?
So I will say that Weymouth has made quite a transition over the last decade. During the Great Recession, we were probably one of the last communities to emerge from the after effects of that recession. We've been able to reinvigorate our park system. We've been able to transition our economic base into one that's going to attract whether it's multi-use, both residential and commercial real estate. And we've been able to do all those things because we have finally emerged from the tough times that we had ever since the 08 recession, the after effects we had until basically 2014, 2015. So we've been able to do some of the more fun things in government rather than the caretaker things that we had to do with our financial situation for 10 years.
Let me ask you: How do you ramp up your campaign? From how many were in your district? 12,000, 10,000.
There's approximately about 9,500 people in each district, and the registered voters are a little different based on how many people are actually registered to vote. But as far as my campaign. Again, I've been here for 5.5 years, and I've been pretty active in townwide events. I've kind of just put myself out there, and what I've learned about myself being on the council is I really love these bigger projects that we sometimes face, such as, you know, the Chapman Middle School, mm-hmm. and I think, you know, the compressor station issue.
Yeah, that was my next question.
I think I've learned...
New library, right?
The new library. There's a lot of great, big, positive things, and... all over town, and just my experience, I want to do more outside of just my neighborhood.
Is the compressor station the number one thing on the list of a lot of the folks that you're getting out and you're talking to? Is that the top of the list, or is it things like streets, my curbs, public safety? Are those more so the top, and then the compressor station is kind of as a matter of fact?
I guess I'll start really mm-hmm. quick just because the compressor station is in District 1, and we've been battling it for over 4.5 years now, and a lot of people in North Weymouth, almost every single person is against the thing. A lot of people see it, and we have such a strong support system with it. Four River residents against the compressor station with, you know, Alice Arena, Andrea Honore, a couple other key players. I mean, the citizens in Weymouth are just dynamic in fighting it. And without them, you know, there would be no fight. That thing would have been built. And, you know, we'd be battling the next issue with the gas expansion projects. But, I think overall the vibe in Weymouth has been pretty positive. I think a lot of people are happy. We just... like you said, we have the new school, the new library, we have new fields. It's just such a positive momentum, and it's just great to be in Weymouth right now.
Do you feel your fields have been upgraded because the mayor plays on them a lot? Chris?
That could be possible. As you know, Mayor Hedlund does have a great interest in athletic sports, and
he's an avid
softball player, and I think that's one of his pet issues that he very much takes an interest in.
I have had a chance to speak with some folks in Weymouth, and that was one of the things they said was, you know, like Legion Field. There's certain fields that for years there were certain fields mm-hmm. that needed some upgrading or need some work, mm-hmm. and that the town, if not just the mayor himself, but the town has gone to great lengths to at least do upgrades.
Yeah, no, with no due respect to Mayor Hedlund, though, the fields were actually in the planning process under Mayor Kay. Yeah, right. And, you know, the planning department and the recreation department. So, but the mayor, he does love his sports, especially softball. So, you know, we appreciate that. And there's actually a game coming up on September 14th. It's going to be South Shore Health through the hospital versus the town of Weymouth. It's a charity event, so if anyone wants to go out to the new Libby Field right across from Town Hall, they're going to be doing that. So it's great to see the partnerships between the town and, you know, places such as South Shore Hospital. And then this past weekend, we did this huge, I'm sure you know, soccer tournament in honor of Sergeant Chesna on Level Field, which pretty much went from about 7 a.m. to about 9 p.m.
I think it was reported on maybe yesterday and
yes,
today.
Yes, yeah. So, I mean, the fields are truly bringing the communities together, and it's just an amazing, amazing feel. And my kids play youth sports, and it's great to see the parents from other towns like Hingham and Marshfield. They come play lacrosse. I'm like, wow, this field is amazing. So it's great for the town, and it's great for the South Shore.
Chris?
So to answer your original question, the compressor station issue does loom large as far as the entire community goes. That's an issue that we want to get. The activism has been great. Becky has been out there, Alice Arena, many other people have been out there extremely active for years now. I believe it's almost been half a decade that they've been fighting this. As far as the other town issues go, I think what I hear from people the most is that we want to continue our positive momentum forward by having events like the Chesna Jamboree that bring the community together. And the fields system as well, the upgrades that have been done to those fields have brought a renewed sense of community to those neighborhoods. Just seeing it last Saturday, the people that were out there, a huge mass of people were out there all day long, and it was great to see. And in past years, that had not been the case. Those fields just 10 years ago were in a state of disarray.
Ken, you're listening to 95.9 WATD, Monday Night Talk, with our guests for this segment, Becky Haugh and Chris Heffernan. Both are candidates for the at-large, five at-large seats, seven candidates. I got to bring it up, the former naval base. That's also, I'm sure, an issue, a conversation. Voters' thoughts on where it's at. It seems like every time you get management, it stalls. And right now it's currently known as Union Point. You had a management team in there, but yet there are issues with it. Your thoughts, Chris?
Sure. So I will say I'm very disappointed with where we find ourselves today. And I know that the people and the residents of Weymouth, especially South Weymouth, are very, very angry about it as well. Currently, a bank called Washington Capital has a request for proposal out to see what could possibly be done with the site. To see a site that, you know, has, they're looking at 4,000 units of housing, 8 million square feet of potential retail space, right in the middle of the South Shore, as I had said, you know, the gateway to the South Shore, the crown jewel of the South Shore. We want this project to be successful. There is not one single person that does not want this project to be successful. And one of my main issues on the council is making sure and overseeing this project and making sure it's a success, just not for Weymouth, just not for South Weymouth, but for the entire South Shore.
Becky, you want to weigh in on this? Do you sense frustration from residents as to how it seems as though the Naval Air Station seems to be making progress when it comes to development, and then something stalls up because there's an issue with the management of the site?
Oh, there's definitely frustration, no doubt about that. And, you know, the sad part is, you know, this base closed nearly two decades ago. And there's really no excuse to be where we're at today. You know, I've been up to Devens, that was actually an Army base, but they're pretty much all developed, and they closed the same year. And obviously the state was involved in that, but, you know, it can be done. And, you know, I'm looking forward to moving forward and just sort of hoping to learn from our past mistakes. And, you know, I think one of the things when I first got on in 2014, we made substantial legislation changes to the agreement. And that actually, before 2014, we didn't see any tax dollars directly come to Weymouth. And because of that, we do. And I think once we had that legislation passed, it kind of changed the feel a little. And we're sort of embracing Union Point a lot more than we were before, as far as a community. And yeah, it's definitely, I'm looking forward to moving forward with Washington Capital.
So I'm going to, my producer and time-to-time co-host, as Ben can sometimes play.
I thought you were going to say cohort.
Yeah. Not yet. Did you have a question, Ben? Ben, do you live in Weymouth?
I do. I am a Weymouth resident.
We have a Weymouth resident here.
Absolutely.
Oh, was he?
Yes, he was.
And I certainly don't want my question to put you guys on the hot seat, so I apologize in advance if I do.
All right, so then turn the temp down a little bit.
Just a little.
When you ask it.
I'm going to go ahead.
Okay.
So what would you say to Weymouth residents who are living right on that Four River line, right on that bridge line. There are some that obviously the concerns are great, as we were just discussing. Some folks are starting to consider the possibilities of looking to live elsewhere just for that reason alone. What would you say to some of those folks who are either looking to move on or looking to dig in and settle up?
Because of the bridge itself? Not because of the bridge,
because of the compressor station and all that other stuff that's going in over there. Okay. A very busy area, as we all know. The USS Salem, not too far from there either. I spend a lot of time myself personally. So a lot of invested folks, for sure. I'm just curious to hear your thoughts.
Chris, go ahead. You want to answer that?
Sure. I will say that this fight is far from over. I would not bet against Weymouth. I would not bet against Frax at any point. And I think that we want everyone to be a part of this community in Weymouth, and I think this fight is far from over, and I would not tell them to leave the community at all.
Follow up, Becky? You want to weigh?
Sure. Well, I don't know if this is comforting or not, but I live 1,400 feet from the proposed site, and I have no intentions of moving. One positive thing from this proposal, though, is that we are now really analyzing all of the issues in the Four River Basin. It hasn't been a stranger to pollution. It's hosted industrial businesses for pretty much a century now, and we're in the process, Representative Mariano, Rep Murphy, Senator O'Connor, they've really fought to get air monitoring down in the Four River, and that looks like it's really moving forward. And we're going to see, compressor or no compressor, I think we're going to have a lot better feel about what exactly is going on in the Four River Basin with the existing industries.
What exactly will this be monitoring? Yeah, with this device, and what exactly is it going to be monitoring? And who will analyze that data? Do you know?
It will be pretty much, I believe, in the same system as the current air monitors. The Commonwealth has probably about 32, 35 air monitors all over. One's in Blue Hills and Milton. There's one in Plymouth. But there's really not one near us. And that was sort of the whole issue, was we have so many industries right there. And we should have one.
You know what's funny is this is very familiar or similar to, we mentioned Brockton earlier, yes. We were talking mayoral, but Brockton, let's not forget, for many years, starting right around, well, I think it was right around 2000, and then later on in 2007, there was a conversation about a power plant. Mm-hmm. They were talking about building a gas-fired power plant, and folks thought it was a foregone conclusion and have fought, and it has not yet been built. Have you had conversations with communities that have dug in and embarked on the same kind of fight that Weymouth is and Weymouth residents are in regards to the compressor station and the dangers that are involved with it?
Sure. I'll let my colleague...
Sure. Well, I mean, you brought up a good point, because one of the issues we have really started to delve deep into is environmental justice. And we have some people in Frax who are just really delving into that, because it seems that a lot of times they put, you know, undesirable industries yet needed industries in the poorer populations. And if we're going to do that, we need to make sure we're protecting our most vulnerable citizens, because it's not just Weymouth for the specific of the compressor station. It's Quincy and Braintree. Yep. And they are communities that are more minority and more low income than your average Massachusetts community. So, I mean, that's even more worth the fight to monitor the Four River because of these populations that are around there.
Chris? And the example you brought to light of Brockton as well, I know that Frax has reached out to numerous other community groups to gain knowledge from their fight on certain situations very typical of, very similar to this one. And I think that it's important that we use their knowledge and also gain as much knowledge as we can from this process as well in order to keep this fight going. I will say it again, this fight is far from over, and I believe it's one that Weymouth will win.
Let's kind of move the conversation forward. Talk about the town financially. How is the town doing financially? And if you're elected, what are some of the things that you want to see to continue moving forward, whether it's your town budget, whether it's education, whether it's... Go ahead, Chris.
Sure. So based on previous years, as I said, in 2008, Weymouth took a very direct hit by the economic recession that took place. Our free cash levels have risen to levels that we had not seen since pre-2008 levels. What I would like to see is that our tax base has always been a challenge, our commercial tax base. The meals tax that was put in by Mayor Kay, I believe it was 5 years ago now, we have seen some revenue from that, but I think growing our commercial tax base still needs to be on the front burner for the foreseeable future. I'd like to make sure that we do that. But I think that the prognosis is very healthy for Waymouth's financial future.
So economic development is doing well, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. Split tax rate in Waymouth? So you have a residential rate and a commercial rate?
That is correct. We okay. do, and we set that every December. Mm-hmm. And the commercial side bears more of the burden.
A little bit
than
higher,
the residential.
Right?
Correct.
Do you feel that your rates are comparable? Do you find yourselves as town councilors looking at Braintree and looking at your neighbors going, well, we want to make sure we're not pricing ourselves out of the market, knowing that we are near a nice throughway like Route 3, and if folks wanted to build, if you had a business that want to come in and be on the tax rolls, they could do so.
Well, historically, we've been on the low end of that, and I think we're either the lowest or one of the lowest in the South Shore, and that's what makes us such an attractive place to, you know, raise a family, buy a home, and I think that will continue to be a trademark of Waymouth, that is an affordable place to come and live and build a family, build a home.
You want to weigh on that, Becky?
Sure, yes. I mean, Waymouth does have one of the lowest average tax bills in the South Shore. I know, obviously, sometimes the rate's a little higher than other communities, but it also is balanced by our assessed values. But it's definitely a great deal. And, you know, we did bring up the compressor station in the industries, and if you went to a flat rate like other communities, then those businesses would be essentially paying the same rate as residential. So you always have to take that balance of what's best for the whole.
Okay. We've got a couple of moments left here before we wrap up our conversation. I want to thank both of you for coming in and being a part of the conversation.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the relationship, how valuable, invaluable it is to have good working relationship with the mayor, to have a partnership, but yet also offer a counterbalance if needed. How important is the relationship with the town council in comparison with the mayor? Becky?
Sure. You know, it's obviously very important to have good relationships with the mayor's office and, you know, all town departments. But at the end of the day, we're the representative of the people who live in Waymouth, and we need to stay strong. And if something's ever proposed or suggested that's not for the betterment of those who live there, that's our job to speak up. And I think as long as we remember that's, you know, at the end of the day, that's our job to be the voice of residents, then we're doing a good job.
Do you agree with what she said?
I do. I thought it's our it's the duty of the council to review the appointments of the mayor, to review anything that comes from the mayor's office that's sent to us in the form of correspondence or something of the like. And I think that having a personal relationship where, you know, you can have a conversation, a frank and honest conversation mm-hmm. with the mayor, some of the staff, and knowing the department heads on a personal level is always useful.
Anything we haven't touched upon during this conversation, but you want to take a moment to at least to touch upon? Again, it could be anything, whether it's, you know, something that somebody has brought up during your campaign, you know, out there campaigning, or just in general.
Well, Becky? I guess I'll start really quick. You talked about the relationship of the mayor, but it's also important to address the relationship of the town council, because there are 11 of us, and we're a relatively new city form of government. It's mm-hmm. only been 20 years, and I think what's great about Waymouth is there's 11 of us, and we aren't cookie cutters. We all have different backgrounds, different, you know, kind of priorities, and I think it's important to keep the diversity. Because for me, I'm not from Waymouth, you know, and I'm a mother. I work full time. Chris, he's a single man, no children. He's from Waymouth. So we're completely opposite, but we both bring great perspectives to the Waymouth Town Council.
Chris?
I would say as well, you know, we're 11 different individuals, but we do see a lot of each other. We're around each other quite a lot out in the community, at community events and meetings. And I will say that having good relationships with the town councilors is of a paramount concern as well. And
school committee too?
School committee.
How important
as well.
Is your relationship with the school committee?
It's very important, especially because, you know, they control a large part of our budget, too. They have a great influence on the overall budget. And I think just having a good relationship with them, the chair of the school committee as well, that's of course, a paramount concern to have.
Folks want to find out more about your individual campaigns? Becky?
Sure. If you want to find out more about me, I have a website, www.beckyhaugh.com, and I'm also on Facebook and Twitter.
Spell your last name.
H-A-U-G-H.
Just want to make sure. Chris?
So I'm on Facebook. It's under Councillor Chris Heffernan, H-E-F-F-E-R-N-A-N.
I want to thank you both for coming in. Wish you the best luck. I wish all the candidates the best of luck. You never want to see anybody lose, but again, it is what it is. And the election is when in November?
November 5th.
All right, get out and vote. I want to thank you both for coming in, and hope to have more conversations with you in the near future.
Well, thank you, Kevin. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
Excellent. We are going to step aside, but guess what, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, the final segment of Monday Night Talk is upon us. Stay tuned. You're listening to 95.9 WATD.
Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Hi, I'm Paul. Isn't it nice when you can keep things simple? Well, now when you switch to Sprint, you can get both an unlimited plan and the all-new Samsung Galaxy S10 included for just $35 per month per line for 5 lines. Plus, Sprint's doing things differently, and now offering a new 100% total satisfaction guarantee. I mean, I think Sprint's network and savings are great, but don't just take my word for it. Try it for 30 days, love it, or get your money back. So, why wouldn't you switch to Sprint? An unlimited plan and the Galaxy S10 for just $35 per month with a 100% total satisfaction guarantee. See what I mean? It's that simple. So switch now. Visit your local Sprint store, Sprint.com, or call 800-SPRINT-1 today.
30-day guarantee select exclusions apply. S10 under 28 gigabyte, $10 a month after 22.50 month credit for 18 months credit. Apply within 2 bills or canceled early. Remaining balance due unlimited basic after 9:30, 20 pay $32 per month per line without a pay. Data deprioritization during ingestion. Coverage and offer not available everywhere. Speed maximums use rules. 30 activation fee and restrictions apply.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
Follow Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, the final segment of Monday Night Talk. I have before me, we'll start with the appetizer, John Shea.
Good evening.
John's a good friend.
Yes.
John is a hard worker. He is, besides hosting his own show, he does a lot with the music here. He also was very instrumental in other areas of the building, but we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk a little bit about his show, Almost Famous, and also talk about a gentleman who is here with us, Monk Duane, who actually, from time to time, I've been on his, I'll say something on one of his Facebook posts, like, hey, gonna have you in. And
here we go.
We're making it happen. Now, however, though, and it's only half credit, though, John.
Uh-oh.
It's only half credit because...
John's in trouble.
No. Knowing that we were supposed to major in communication... The thought was is that we'd get a little live performance.
Well, I sent you a live track.
Okay. Like I said, half credit.
Yes.
But what's amazing is to be able to speak with Monk, knowing that he's a Whitman guy.
Yes.
No, and I didn't realize, honestly, I thought you were just this great performer, not only as a solo, but Souljackers,
yes.
Souljackers. See that? Souljackers, yep. But also, there's other things that you do. I didn't realize that you were a film composer.
Yes. Yeah.
My goodness. Now, are you strictly just music, or do you delve into doing video editing at all?
And I do a tiny bit of video editing, but most of what I do is composing music for TV and film.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So I'm looking forward to getting to know you a little bit. And also even give a little love to John. John has a fantastic show.
Thank you.
I'm a big fan of local music. And nowadays, commercial radio doesn't necessarily give a lot of love to local musicians. As much love as they should give. Unless your name is T.S., you're part of the Swifties, or some of the other pop music sensations. But it's refreshing that John is the local guy who does his best. I mean, today he's putting out on social media, hey, who's got a gig? So he can promote artists. How important is that, Monk? A guy like John. John, we're going to get John, we'll get a little bit of love here.
All right.
Half credit. Sounds love.
Good. Thank you.
I've actually said this many, many times, and in fact pointed it out last year at the New England Music Awards, specifically in regard to people like John, in that musicians absolutely depend on evangelists, because without it, we're literally the tree falling in the forest. If not for people like John who get up and shout it to the world, nobody knows we exist.
John, how did Almost Famous get started? And why is it Almost? Why is it Half Credit? Why is it the Famous? The South Shore Famous? Why?
Well, I started it with Lisa Azizian, who does the morning show. At the time, she was doing...
I would say she moved up in rank, right? Where she's on a little morning bit, show, yeah. South Shore Morning News?
She did. More money.
I don't think it had nothing to do with the money, but I think it's a matter of... you're the guy with the musical taste. It's funny. Because I can remember, you know, when this show had there's a different name out on the moniker as the host. It was funny, we mentioned him earlier as we're talking Weymouth politics.
The mayor.
The mayor, Bob Hedlund, who you two would have go back and forth when it would come to music. You know, it's just interesting that, you know, you've taken a concept and it's done well, and you've hosted a number of things. I think you've been recognized for your work when it comes to local artists, correct?
I have, yes. New England Music Awards gave me the Decade Award this past award show, when Sam Show Monk was named Male Performer of the Year.
That's fantastic. What's that like to be named Male Performer of the Year?
It was shocking.
For music.
Yeah. That's the problem, right?
Yes.
It was really surprising. It's because this is not something that I was looking for. I didn't lobby for it. Or
you're a humble guy.
No, I'm a busy guy. I work a lot, and that's by design.
But it's okay to be humble too,
I suppose. I mean, you should give yourself credit where credit is due as well, because sure, a lot of people don't do. I certainly don't do that. But I work a lot, and the fact that it even came up as a nomination alone, that was really gratifying, and that, wow, I work really hard, and someone noticed, someone was looking, and that was not a small thing. The winning was completely unexpected. Like I had said that night, I was there to support Will Daly because he was also nominated in the same category, and completely expected to hear his name called, and mine was called, and I had nothing prepared to say, and because I didn't expect it.
Well, no, it's interesting because you're nominated for the 2019 Album of the Year and Video of the Year. And folks, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, voting is now open, is it not?
It's closed.
Closed Thursday, I think.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Yes. We missed it by that much.
That's okay.
it's all good. But again, I'm sure that folks have gotten out there and voted. We'll find out the results when, John?
That is September 7th.
Yes.
Oh, so it's a couple of weeks away.
Mix, yeah. 360 in Malden.
That's right.
John, are you up for any awards?
Not that I'm aware of.
But you'll be in attendance.
I'll be in attendance, yeah. I think I'm presenting Songwriter of the Year. I'll find out when I get there.
All right. I'm going to delve into genres here. John, what's some of the genres of music that we can hear on Almost Famous?
More or less across the board. I mean, I was just playing...
Are you sure?
Pretty much. And okay, I was playing Monka Trek from a band that originated in Boston, has ties to New Orleans. We do a little... experimental jazz. We do some rock, obviously pop, so a little bit of blues, kind of in the spirit of Peter Black when he used to be here.
Sure.
He did a lot of stuff. He turned me on to a lot of stuff. So it's kind of across the board. I mean, you never know. Just tune in and find out yourself.
You've turned me on to people I had never heard of, the soul artists, the things that were in my wheelhouse, yeah, that you're like, oh, you'd love this. And
Allie McGurk.
Allie McGurk is a great example, yeah.
Some of the genres that you enjoy, Monk. If I was to take your phone away from you right now,
yes,
and look and see what you have in your playlist, what some of the genres and some of the music that I'd hear?
Oh, you're gonna go all over the map, but primarily
very eclectic.
I'm incredibly eclectic. I do as a songwriter, I gravitate toward old school R&B and soul and funk, okay. And everything from Stevie Wonder to Prince to Otis Redding and Sam Cooke. Huge vocal influence. That's where I come from.
Now, if I was to take your phone away from you, John, what's some of the other than the local artists that you want to give love to? What's your wheelhouse? What is some of the music that you love listening?
Believe
to?
It or not, I listen to music so much here that when I get in my car, I don't listen to music.
I listen to talk radio.
I do that too. I listen to a lot of NPR. Yeah. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and it's a break from. From just, you know, having headphones on all day, listening to, you know, to this, you know, not the same songs, but just music has a tone to it that, you know, after a while can hurt your ears. And I think it's kind of a break to listen to talk. That's a little bit more of a switch.
Can I tell you, so a year ago, just for the heck of it, I know this is heresy because I work for a terrestrial radio station, okay? But I went satellite.
Yeah?
And I got to tell you, it's like eating hamburgers and hot dogs, and then finding out that there are other foods that you can tease your palate with.
Right.
And, I mean, I on any given day, I could be listening to something from the 1940s, because I just love that stuff.
They have, like, an old-time radio show play on that.
Yeah, it's Station 148. Yeah. Yes. Which I know that an organization that you work for from time to time. It's another conversation for another day, but that you guys kind of do that.
We do
the old time radio.
We do
from back in the day,
and that's fun too. I listen to some of that stuff too. I take a break from music, and then I come back to music when I come to work here, which is kind of a fun thing to come to work to.
Should I have asked you what era you favor? Maybe I'll, what era do you favor? Do you have an era of music that you like?
Me,
it's the 70s. Love the 70s. Love.
See, for me, it's whatever is next. So whatever is current.
I got to say, I walk the line between late 60s, early 70s to right this second.
Okay.
I love the way that music is being made right now. And I love the idea of taking old school and marrying it with new technique.
Very nice. Should we play a little? You actually were kind enough to give us some of the folks who have gone on and removed the almost part from the part when they came on to your show. Correct?
Yeah, exactly.
Who do you want to hear first? Other than Monk, do you want to say Monk is like the dessert? Think of it like going out to dinner. You want to have a series of apps, or do you want to like Analog Heart, or do you want to go right into an entree?
Dude, how about producer's choice?
So wait, you're throwing it to Ben?
Ben or you?
Ben, we'll throw it to Ben. Ben, who do you are? So we'll play the track, and you give us a little bit of a background on the track.
Sure.
All right. Ben, if you will, let's go with a mystery song. And these are individuals who have performed on the tiny stage.
Yes.
Which we are we're kind of near, right?
Yes, exactly.
Just want to make sure. If you will, pick one, Ben, and share it with our audience.
Make me believe again that we can be more.
That's soulful.
That's a great voice.
More than a passing,
kind of like what Monk was saying, a throwback
memory.
To late 60s, Janis Otis.
Show me what love is for.
Now, this is an artist. Her name is, the band is named Amber Eyes. They're based out of Rochester, Massachusetts, not too far from here, Plymouth County.
Sure.
And they just dropped their debut album just, I think, a weekend and a half ago. And they recorded in Rockland with a gentleman named Sean McLaughlin, 37 Foot Productions.
How awesome is that? I mean, it's not like there was a time when you had to go into Boston. There's this big studio, and it's a 128, 256 channel board. Right. And there's all these. You can like do it in your house now.
Heat Monk does.
That's what I do. Actually, I do half of it at Sean's place. and I do the other half in my house. So Sean McLaughlin, who's also nominated for
Producer of the Year.
Producer of the Year this year and last year and the year before. And yeah. I think he won the year two years ago.
I think he's won at least two or three times.
But there's the difference between having that interaction with other human beings, which is going to spark new ideas, versus having that solitary time to see your vision through. And I think walking that line between both those worlds is really where you realize the vision of what you were working on. Because working in a vacuum isn't healthy. But always having to compromise is also not healthy. So I like that middle ground.
And that track we just heard, too, was actually recorded live here at WATD.
What was the name? Do we know the name of the song?
That was called Ecstasy. And she was here in studio because at the time they were crowdfunding to record their album. They had no money.
That's another great thing is crowdfunding. Yeah. All the fun, unique things thanks to, you know, the internet.
Yep.
You know, it's definitely
fantastic.
The album
was made with the help of the fans.
That's awesome. What's the next? You want to pick another one for us, Ben? Ben spinning the magical wheel of music. Thanks to John. Courtesy, and I want to say thank John. John, I sprung this on John last moment. I like to interact with some of the folks who are personalities here, whether it's Ron Dwyer on the weekend or having Kathy D when she's walking out the door to retire. And Joe Harrington earlier today is like, oh, when do you have Liz Raven on? I go, there's a time and a place for everything. But the idea of my colleagues who do great work here, John does a great job. And he's a fun guy I can sit here and chat with, and we go back and forth. And he works very hard
behalf,
not only as far as the things that he does for the station, for what you hear, for the adult contempt, but also for local artists. So, if you will, I think the wheel has stopped. If you will, the next selection, Ben.
Oh, my love.
This is a band called Analog Hearts. Liz Bills is the lead singer. This is another band, actually, that I just recorded with Sean McLaughlin. So it's funny.
Sounds like a pattern.
Yes. It's funny you mentioned you play these tracks back-to-back. Jill Jensen, lead singer of Amber Eyes that we just heard, kind of got her career started on The X Factor and on American Idol, and I believe Liz Bills was on The Voice and kind of built a reputation for having a following on the reality show.
Do you ever marvel at the folks that you've had on who've gone on and done some fantastic things? I mean, you've had Monk on. Monk is an award-winning artist.
Yeah, I mean, I do, and I mean, I just like...
I mean, he's no longer almost. He's famous.
Absolutely. And the name fits and it doesn't fit, but at the same time, I just kind of love to see what's happening next. Like, who's the next person to walk through the door? You know, who's going to write the next best song?
It's great that there's so much talent here on the South Shore or in the Commonwealth.
And it's never going to dry up. It's still going to continue. You know, it's one of those things that's going to continue forever. There's always going to be great music. There's always going to be great songwriters.
Because of the ease of the technology now, you have people who are coming up who are kids who are realizing that vision in their bedroom. And it's like John's saying, there's always this new crop, and they're always doing something that you just hadn't thought of yet. And that's exciting.
It's about like putting beats together and being able to get, you know, an artist to sing, you know, and they go, who's this person? You know, like Marshmello. It's like, you know, who's this person who's you know, who's mixing these beats, these tones together and making something out of it. It's phenomenal. It's mind-blowing. I mean, I tried many times. I mean, I'm a practicing musician, but I'll never move beyond practicing because... Like you, Monk, I'm busy doing what I do, whether it's here or in another avenue.
Sure.
We're going to spin the wheel again. Ben, if you will, our next selection, please.
It's called Even If Your Heart Is Blue.
All right. And this is Jay Passaros.
Well, there ain't no doubt love can change a man, even after all he's been through. Like a child on Christmas Day, every bit of light shining through.
And Jay just dropped a new album himself. It's called The Trees Beyond the Town. Jay is a unique musician because he, in addition to being a great performer, he also is a great promoter of local talent. He posts almost every day about openings for shows that he's producing in hotels and bars and clubs all up and down the South Shore, and even expanding into like Baltimore. I mean, he books all over the place, and he's always looking for new talent to play venues and get in front of people and kind of work their craft.
Are there enough venues to be able to play in? To play in around the South Shore or in the Boston area?
I think you have to be, it depends on the question, right? Are there enough venues to play your music in or to play music in?
Okay.
There are never really enough venues to play your own music in, but you can work it in a clever way if you don't hit people over the head with it. And that's something that I've been doing a lot when I play with Soul Jacker, which is a cover band, but I work my own music into the shows anyway. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, it's people come up and they're, who did that song? I'm like, well, that's one of mine. So you can, if it's on brand and it doesn't stick out like a sore thumb, you can work it in there.
No, I'm proud to say that we're sponsored not only by Tiny and Sons Glass, Peter Brown. Does a great job. He's an
great
awesome
human
guy.
Being.
Great human being. And I swear he's cloned because he's everywhere. But we're also sponsored by McGuigan's Pub, the patio at McGuigan's. And my understanding is,
yes.
is that hopefully one of these days that you'll play the patio. Now, I understand, I have it on great authority, that I think you might be busy in October, and I think that they're all set in October. But is there a chance of getting you to...
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that. Richard is my next-door neighbor.
No. You know, it's funny, I know that.
We were just talking over the fence about that a week ago. So at some point, that's going to happen, yes.
When would you like to? Have you been to the patio?
I have. I was just there 2 weeks ago.
What'd you have?
What did I have?
Do you remember?
I don't, but it was fabulous. I don't remember what it was,
okay.
though.
Me and the missus, we love the Beyond Burger. It's like that thing, I mean, I don't
know. Bray short rib.
There
it
was
fabulous. Yes.
Yeah. It's interesting, and that's something he just conjured up.
Yes.
No, he wanted me to kind of mention it to you that he definitely would love
of
to have
course,
you. And
yes.
maybe if you're available in November, maybe you two should talk over the fence again.
We will. We do all the time.
He'd love to have you, you know, come on in and perform, being that you are a Whitman guy.
I am a Whitman guy.
Which is fantastic.
One thing that is changing, though, about local venues is a lot of venues now are supporting original music. There's
yes.
places in Scituate. There's places in Stoughton that will encourage you. Like, I can put on Pandora and hear covers. I'm paying you to play your music.
Yeah.
So I would ask both of you. So if you could have somebody on your show... Somebody who's famous, dead or alive, who'd you want?
I would say the next big act in Boston. I don't know who it is yet.
Come on, John, stop. Stop. Deep down inside, if there was somebody, dead or alive, that's famous, that you could have that would be on your show, whether they performed on the tiny stage or sat in with you, who? There's got to be somebody you love.
To me,
it'd be Dave Grohl. I'm big Dave Grohl fan.
Yeah, but he's not local, so I gotta.
No, I can't.
He's giving you the world,
dude.
Yeah.
I'm giving you. All due respect, with all the local bands, your love for local,
I mean,
is great.
If it's not local, if it could be anybody,
okay. Yeah, if you're gonna stay local, somebody who's local, who went famous, who.
I would probably say. Somebody like. See, this is tough. I mean, Grace Potter is awesome.
Should I come back to
Grace,
you?
I love Grace Potter.
Should I come back to you? Okay.
Grace Potter and the Nocturnals.
I know you're a busy guy, Monk, but if you could tour with somebody, leave this area, is this somebody that you'd be like, we would be a perfect one-two punch?
Hall & Oates.
Really?
Yes.
Love Hall & Oates.
Yes.
Love, love, love.
Absolutely love.
Maybe perform at Daryl's house?
I'm trying to make that happen.
Are you really?
Yes, I am.
That would be phenomenal.
Yeah.
See, I love that whole concept.
Yes.
Nobody believes me, but I could have sworn many, many years ago, like maybe 10 or 15 years ago.
What, that he rented a house nearby?
No, that Hall & Oates played the Weymouth Air Force Base.
They might have.
It's possible.
Sure.
Anything's possible. Anything is possible.
I bet that's trackable. But they're out touring right now. And they
still sound great.
They still sound so good. Daryl Hall's 70 years old.
I was just watching. I was, swear to God, this weekend was watching them. They were on. They might have been on the Rhode Island channel.
Right.
It was a PBS channel, GSX or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they were performing. And they were phenomenal.
Yep.
And I forgot who they're performing with, but I've loved watching go on YouTube, Daryl's house,
yes.
and watching who he has come in and who he performs with.
CeeLo Green, I mean, he can outsing anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Can we play? We've played three cuts. Let's play a fourth cut, saving the best for last, of course.
This is probably the most famous person I've had on the show, next to Monk.
Kitchen smells like orange peels. Her stomach turns like
And this is Lori McKenna from Stoughton, Massachusetts. And she's gone on to win.
Grammy?
She won a couple of Grammys, couple I believe. But she had come on the show, I think she'd come on directly from Nashville. She was coming from like Logan Airport to Marshfield, then back home to Stoughton. And she had just written a bunch of songs with her her friends. And two of those songs went on to win Song of the Year consecutively, one year after the other. So one of them was Girl Crush, which I think was recorded by Little Big Town, and then Humble and Kind by Tim McGraw.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
So she's talented. And she's a mother of five, and I think she's like, she's got...
Really?
Yeah, she's got many kids.
God bless her. Nothing wrong with
many
that.
Still kids. Writing.
Well, I was going to ask you, Monk, is there anything that... Are you more just someone who writes and performs? Are you somebody who's gotten into the area of writing, and if there's an artist that's willing to purchase or even use your material and credit you?
I have not pursued that. I'd be willing to. I'm the world's worst collaborator. I really am. I'm terrible at writing with other people. I've tried it. I'm just bad at it.
What is it about? I mean, again, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
You either can work with somebody or you feel you're better in your own headspace.
The second I have to stop and verbally communicate an idea or a vision, I feel like I'm losing that idea as I'm speaking about it. And I move very fast. I work very fast. And it's hard for me to stop and try and make it a dialogue because it's its own language. The only time it's even remotely resembling an English dialogue is when you get to the lyrics. And by that point, I've written most of the song.
Mm.
So I'm just bad at it. And I've tried and I've recognized that. And I know that's the trend, especially like in places like Nashville or whatever. I'm not that guy.
If you will, Ben. Best for last. If you will take us through the description of this, you will play the last file. This song?
It's called Stupid Pride.
Really?
Yes.
And what's the song about?
This is a song about arrogance and how it is pervasive at the moment and not even meaningfully so in terms of people are unaware that they're taking these positions based on little to no information. And drawing very deep lines in the sand based on a lot of hearsay.
Sounds like another thing. Sounds like another thing on social media.
Exactly. Might be.
It's fantastic. I love the groove. What would you say? What do you get for songs in your catalog? How many songs have you written that you perform on a regular basis? And if somebody wanted to get your music, how can they do that?
Well, they can go to monkduane.com, MUNKDUANE. You can go all the Amazon, iTunes, Spotify, all that good stuff. But how many songs?
Yes.
Probably over 1,000 at this point. I've written for TV and film for almost 20 years at this point. So things I've forgotten. You know, come out and gone and passed, and I don't even remember. And in terms of active part of my catalog, probably 25 or 30 are fairly tight over the past three releases.
Folks want to see you or Soul Jack, or you with Soul Jack, or mm-hmm. How can they do that? What do we got?
Again, just go to monkduane.com. The calendar is up there, and it's always up to date.
Before we turn to you, John, I just want to make sure I tease following this program in a few moments. We got cross-check with two-time Stanley Cup winner Kevin Stevens. Andy and Alex as their co-host tonight. They got champion swimmer Morgan Stickney, who is a standout amateur New England swimmer who actually had her lower leg amputated. However, she continues to maintain an incredible outlook and persistence to move forward, to inspire and challenge others that she faces, other challenges that she faces. And she actually is going to share her personal story and goals to be able to swim in the 2024 Paralympics game. So
fantastic.
Stay tuned for that. John, I think you owe us a little bit of a tease for tomorrow night. How can folks tune in at 8 o'clock tomorrow night? Is it 8 o'clock?
8 o'clock, yep.
Yeah.
I'll give you two teases. Jonathan Soucy on the tiny stage tomorrow night, visiting wine at the Marshfield Fair for Almost Famous Night on Wednesday at 6.
That's fantastic. And if folks want to, do you podcast?
I do. Huh. Yep, just search for Almost Famous WATD.
Okay. And what do you want? What are you using for a podcast?
Podbean.
Oh, just like me.
Yep, exactly.
Right. What are you up to by right now? You got to have
10,000, I think.
Goodness gracious.
Good to go.
It's a fantastic show, and thank you. It's great what you do for local music. We got to have you back in and talk strictly music.
Definitely.
I know you're like a trivia guy. Are you a music trivia guy too?
Yeah.
I really?
Yeah.
We'll have to make this happen. Well, you're not so busy. I want to thank both of you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
It's really been an honor and a privilege to talk to both of you, talk music, talk a little bit about John and all the great things he does, and get to meet Monk, a guy who I've followed and that I'm looking forward now I get to see you live. I got to complete the circle.
Complete that circle.
Excellent.
Thank you.
That's right, the patio. Maybe in...
We'll make the patio happen.
Make the patio. Maybe we'll have a Beyond Burger together.
Another fence conversation.
I'm sure Richard is grinning ear to ear right now. That's all the time that we have here. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have a great evening. You've been listening to Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD.